go to thecollectiverampage.com. Keep fueling the change. Help continue to allow this to happen. None of this would happen without you and your love and your support. Love you.
The Cognitive Rampage, a scientific approach to self-discovery, change, and life optimization, is now available on Amazon. What I do in the book is I fuse the latest research from the cognitive, behavioral, social, environmental, and biological sciences. It's not just motivational fluff and wordplay. Now, I do talk about my own story, so there's some kind of inspiration in there, but I'm not just spinning words and hyping you up with motivational fluff. Whether you need a life change, simply enjoy self-exploration and optimization, want to discover new hidden passions, or reduce the life-altering effects of toil, anxiety, depression, all of those issues, this book is for you. This book is not a cookie-cutter method of steps to follow. You'll customize the scientific framework with your own personal beliefs to build your authentic change. That way you assimilate it faster. It's not just copying my beliefs and telling you step one, step two. These will come from your beliefs as how you extend and build the foundation upon this framework. You'll use this framework throughout your whole life, through every change, and through every age. These are not empty words of motivational spin. This book is an experience. The Cognitive Rampage is based in science and is built from your beliefs. It's a path to help you unleash your desired change. You can apply this method on your own with no harmful side effects.
But the sun shines after the rain. Come on, y'all. Lord, I try not to complain because the sun shines after the rain. All right, Joe. About time to go to work. Come on now. I can't do it, baby. Find someone who will love me, regardless of my past. When I lived fast and I only cared about the cash, living life in the dance. Took my daughter to the movie. A group of strangers came walking up and talking to me. This must be that fame thing, but this is just a glimpse. I don't mean to sound rude, but I don't like this shit. But then they told me that my CD was banging, and they said that I encouraged them to really start changing. It's funny how my mood and my view can make them feel like me and make me feel like you, for real. You know, it's crazy. Tomorrow's not promised to us. Yeah, you know that, y'all. Yeah. Welcome. Let's get this thing going, man. Enough music playing. Let's get some talking going, man. It's been a minute since I've done a podcast, since I've been live. I've been sitting on it for a while, so it's kind of built up. Been a lot going on in my life lately, and beautiful things, good things, tough things, right? But through the fire, steel is forged, right? As my mama told me. Shout out to you too, mama. Love you. But I'm gonna start off a little bit with the phrase baby steps. I gotta tell you, I'm tired of hearing fucking baby steps. It seems to be the fail-safe that we love to tell anybody that's trying to either get their life together, or a government that is corrupt, or a field that needs work, mental health for one. We love to say baby steps. Even in the cannabis industry, baby steps, Adam. That's all I keep hearing. Baby steps, baby steps. The science is out on how we really help. And the science is out on how we don't really help. And still, systems stay the same. I mean, we can take gun control, for example, right? This weak law that they're trying to pass right now, it's terrible. Most of those things are already in place. It's terrible. But when you hear a congressperson say, it's baby steps. It's a move in the right direction. That's all we fucking hear. And meanwhile, we got legislation already drawn up that doesn't allow flight attendants to force passengers to put their puppy in an overhead compartment. For one, my puppy would have never been in that overhead compartment. We'd have been landing somewhere because I'd have caused a scene. I promise you that. So you ain't forcing me to put my puppy in overhead. But we already got legislation drafted to stop this from happening, and we draft some piss-poor legislation about guns in schools. It's ridiculous, man. So the baby steps issue, it's such a fucking cop-out to me. Brent Lozen, great guy, smart cat in the tribe, man, love him to death. Shout out to you, Brent. Sent me a video about a new approach. And I love it. I like the approach that, but all they seemed to market in this approach was, well, it's counseling with a personal touch. Like it's fucking interior design. You know what I'm saying? Like, and they marketed, like, their whole angle, their talking point of their video was, it's a personal touch and we give our clients hope. Well, it sounds good. And I'm glad that you're treating prisoners not in a prison with substance abuse. That's a step, but it's still not the right environment. The actual environment that they go home to. And again, it was another 90-day treatment. There is no magic number, people. There is no fucking magic number in 30, 60, 90, 120. These are made up by insurance companies. There is no science whatsoever. There's research out that will tell you, well, if you do 60, you have a better chance of doing 30. No shit. That's not scientific. That's all insurance, and that's just duh. So 90 days, 120 days a year, there's not some magical mark that if you're in rehab for X amount of time, you'll be fine. So again, you know, people want to say, hey, it's baby steps, right? At least they're not treating the substance abuse patients in the prison. Well, and here's what they kept saying. Well, we treat them like human beings.
Well, fuck yeah.
What else would you treat them like? What the hell? You're advertising marketing as if your niche of your group is the fact you treat people like humans. The fuck, how bad is the mental health practice and addiction rehab if the marketing angle of a new approach is we treat people like humans? What the fuck? The baby step shit is retarded. I'm tired of it. I hate it. I'm saying that word too. I don't give a shit about that either, you progressive movement. Can't say fucking this, can't say that. Kiss my ass. If you don't like this curse word, get the hell off this podcast. I don't give a shit. I really don't care anymore. Forcing people to change beliefs over what you believe. I can't stand that, man. And so this baby step, whatever it is, right? And I can hear you now. Adam, it's legislation. We have to take the baby steps. No, we fucking don't. No, we fucking don't. We don't make baby steps, right, when it's terrorism. We don't make baby steps when there's shootings, right? Yes, we do. We still do baby steps. It's all baby steps. Here's a little spoon-fed fucking something so someone shuts the fuck up and we can go back to doing what we normally do, which is making a bunch of fucking money. That's really it. So the baby ship, it just needs to stop, man. I mean, it's baby steps I keep hearing in a lot of hype and viral videos and no fucking change. Just no change. My point being is we have to move beyond the baby steps. If science has already shown that this is destructive, this doesn't work. If we have rising rates of anxiety, depression, skyrocketing, but yet we have more access to treatment, but yet it gets worse. It's because we have a sick society, people. We have a sick society. We want to talk about guns and these things. These are surface fucking issues. These are surface issues that people can take hard stances on that doesn't mean a fucking thing. Until we actually fix society as a whole, we can keep playing around with these fucking surface issues and keep taking baby steps to protect our children in schools. It's fucking ridiculous. For the most part, the kids did it the best by trying to walk out. I mean, think about it. I mean, the 80s babies had to deal with it with the threat of nuclear war and climbing under your desk, right? And now our kids today, look, when I was in school, it was some gangster shit. But people weren't walking in with AK-47s and AR-15s and opening up fire on kids, man. And I think about my daughter at that school. What does a kid think when they don't know any better? You know what I mean? They play that stuff up, man. It's terrible, man. We focus on surface issues and we claim baby steps and nothing fucking changes. And in mental health, I'm fucking tired of it because people are fucking dying. I did not start this podcast for my fucking ego. I did not start this podcast so I could sell 10,000 books. I'm not trying to make viral videos. If I do make a viral video, fucking great. Then maybe somebody hears some fucking truth. But I'm not doing that. I started this shit because people were fucking dying. People didn't get it. People were dying and they didn't give a shit. And people are listening now that finally some doctors have climbed out of their fucking little lockdown degrees and shit and their licenses and they're saying the truth now and they're making more money on their viral videos and their programs and their workshops than they were as a practicing psychiatrist, Dr. Kelly Brogan. Yeah, I'm calling you out. Yeah, you get on Rogan after I do talking all this other shit about how it's all fucked up, but that's years and years after you made money as a practicing psychiatrist. And now when it gets trendy, when guys like me, Dr. Stanton Peel, and other people have come out and put this shit on Front Street, you start making money off of motherfuckers a different way. But you're the hero, aren't you? Motherfuckers been saying a long time before you did, and we don't have doctors in front of our fucking names. We've been listening. We've been listening. Joe, you need to pay attention, homie. I'm getting tired of your ass too, man. I mean, Joe, you get on my nerves, man. I listen to you all the time. I'm talking about you, Mr. Rogan. I sent you that video today, man. You fucking utterly depressed me when I left doing that podcast with you, sir. You were kind enough to bring me on, but your responses and the human being that you were after that, And I'll tell you that straight up. And if I was in your position, Mr. Joe Rogan, you stand back and you go, oh, I'm just a host. I'm a comedian. I don't do anything. That's great that we can tout off that you bring up all this great stuff to light. You're bringing up sciences. Thank you, Jesus, that somebody like you came out and fucking brought people on air to say some real stuff. I love that. That's great. But is it baby steps? See, if somebody like me was in your position with that kind of fucking reach, I'd be changing. I'd be making changes. I'd be instituting changes, making movements, doing something bigger instead of just standing there collecting one sponsorship dollar after another. Talking about you just having fun. I don't even mean to do nothing. Well, what you created, sir, is a massive movement of change of people listening. And just to not take advantage of that and move real change in this fucking world, well, I'm sorry, but that's not using your seat to your full advantage, sir. This shit wasn't even on the fucking topics today, but I'm going off today, y'all. It's the fucking truth, man. I'm laying this shit out here today, man. So let's move on to talking about inspiration to stupidity. Speaking of. So as we move on to inspiration to stupidity, many of these types of people are on Joe Rogan's podcast, and they're everywhere. Now, don't get me twisted here. I'm just trying to go a little farther down the cerebral road, as opposed to just looking at who's the fastest and the strongest, like we're on a fucking kickball team in elementary school. Can we move past the fucking world where we pick our leaders that are cool, rich, good-looking, or good business people, if you will, or fast, or the strongest? Yeah, that's our leader. We're like fucking a bunch of chimpanzees. Hey, that's the biggest. He can beat us all up. We should follow him. What the fuck are we doing? The cognitive rampage is beyond that bullshit. It's beyond that bullshit social media inspirational garbage that most people aren't saying a fucking thing. They're telling you trendy shit that sounds good that don't mean a fucking thing. And I'm going to get to that earlier. I got three trendy sayings popping out this week that I'm going to cover that I will tell you that don't mean a fucking thing. You know, I can't help but cruise social media, look at these inspirational people talking all this shit and saying stuff. Now, some of these stories are very inspiring. You know, let's walk through the cliche fucking story, if you will. Okay. My life was shit. My parents were abusive. This isn't, my dad, but we're going to just say the all-around general story that these people say, right? We get it. You came from shit. You didn't have shit. You transferred to some place. You had $2 in your name. You ate ants for fucking 7 years while you stayed focused on your dream. And you slept in cars and you were homeless, but you always believed. And you kept making it. And with no luck, timing, money, or trust from someone else, right? You made it on your own. There's no such thing as a self-made person. So if you say that, fuck you. You're not self-made. Somebody bought your product. Somebody fucking had faith in you, and somebody did something. Hell, your parents may have even raised you. So you're not self-made. So quit with that shit. So anybody out there that thinks they're self-made, take a step back from your fucking ego stance, okay? So we get the story that you come from shit. You've made it. Now you have money. And now you are successful and we should follow you. Well, now you start blabbering out a whole bunch of shit that we're supposed to do in our lives that you do. And, well, aren't I great? And here's where they move to the next level. The next level is I squatted 17,000 trillion tons. I ran 65,000 marathons in 2 minutes. I did 84 million pull-ups in 30 seconds. And we stand back and go, ah, wow, he's amazing. And then touts off, I ain't got no education, I don't know shit, I didn't even go to college. All this touted bullshit, I'm so tired of this fucking story, because how far do we follow the fucking, the fastest guy, the biggest guy, the guy who runs the longest, who can fight the best, how long do we follow this guy before we realize the physical movements that these people are doing will fucking hurt them? That at 55 and 60 and 65, these heroes that we look up to that are doing all these amazing physical feats won't even be able to fucking walk. But we should follow them. And this is what I mean by inspiration to stupidity. How far do you follow inspiration before you also become stupid? Before you are following exactly what someone else told you to do, believing it's your authentic life? How many other directions from other people do we follow and do you follow and then claim it's your own life? It's ridiculous. When do we actually question the inspiration and when the inspiration has actually reached stupidity? If somebody is inspiring you to get off your ass or to get healthier to do something, fucking great. We all need that shit. I dig it. I dig it. Take the inspiration. Take that motivation. I dig it. Fuel it. But look, it's not going to last, right? There's extrinsic motivation. There's no such thing, right? We're moved by extrinsic motivation, right? You want to find your intrinsic motivation? Look up the science. There's no such thing. We are pulled by extrinsic forces, period. And so we search for intrinsic motivation. These are words that sound good. They don't mean a fucking thing. So when do we then question who is inspiring the masses and how dumb are they really? And what are they really doing? What are they touting? Look, if you feed inspiration off of anything and it fuels you to do something, I'm a fan of that. I am. But not everybody's on fucking rock bottom. Not everybody's there. Some people are trying to optimize or go to a place, and if you're trying to do that just by accomplishing physical feats to prove yourself something, I think Jim Carrey said it best on Comedians in Cars, which is a terrible fucking show, by the way. Seinfeld, that is god-awful, and your chemistry with Jim Carrey was awful. Jim Carrey said it best, though, when he climbed to the top of his booth in the restaurant, and he has his own sweetener, and he drops it down from way up high down to the coffee cup on the floor, and he feels good doing it. He goes, man, it doesn't take a lot for us to feel good about ourselves, does it? No, it doesn't. So if you find the inspiration from somewhere, then use it. But if you've moved beyond rock bottom, if you've moved beyond just plateaued, and you're listening to somebody that's telling you, I am the shit because I do all of these physical feats and I came from nothing, well, great. What does that mean for the person that actually happened to get blessed with a decent life that was okay that still made it? Are they pieces of shit because they didn't have it tough? See, I hate that. We have to begin to question the inspiration when it reaches to the stupidity level of somebody that's telling me that I need to push through and run myself till I almost die. Get the fuck out of here. I get tired of this, man. The wrong leaders, man. And as we move on to that next topic, what I wrote down was a couple words. Pride, success, getting to your head, and forgetting where you fucking come from. The holier than thou. Now, there's somebody I'd love to mention right now that has turned into somebody totally different I don't hardly even recognize. And when people accomplish things that they thought they never would, well, it tends to feed that ego really quickly. And they begin to be the ones telling everybody else what they should be doing, when it wasn't long ago when you weren't doing shit. But because you had some luck, you made a couple decisions, I guess we should listen to you now. Don't forget where you come from. You see, I watched a good movie, actually, the other night. You should probably look up. Watch it. I enjoyed it. It was called The Pirates of Somalia. And it was a great look at the Somalian issues going over there, but it's based on a true story. And a Somali guy is looking at, spoiler alert here, it's just a little line, right? So this guy wants to go to a place. This white reporter wants to go to a place. He's made friends with this great Somali guy. The Somali guy's nervous for him. The white guy's like, hey, man, I'm really scared. You know, I know you might think this is stupid, but the Somali guy looks at him and says, the path a man chooses is his own. I don't even have to try to understand it. I like that line. I'm going to add that to my life philosophy, actually. Because the more I try to understand other people or their lives and match it to my own beliefs, well, this causes toil. Imagine sitting back, all the people you're worried about right now, all the people, your brother, your dad, your wife, whatever it is, whoever you're worried about right now, your kids, sitting there pondering just, oh, just toil, toil, toil. I've done a million videos that tell you depression, anxiety, these mental disturbances generally come from a toil when we have to make a choice or we have made one we don't like. But when we make it, we can't forget where we came from. We cannot be holier than thou. If someone chooses their path and you try to understand that path and cannot, you will drive toil into your life. You may even drive more toil into their lives because they can't be like you. So we have to be careful. We have to be careful of where we create the toil and what we think of, for each man or woman's path is their own and it is not for us to understand. That will free you more than you fucking know. It will free you more than you know. Apply that. But to those that once were in the shit, did some things that quite may be inspiring, don't get too prideful, sir or ma'am. Don't forget where you came from or who the fuck you really are. And be careful before you cross the line from inspiration to stupidity. And there's a couple trendy sayings that I may get to that are going to cover this. I'm going to start out with the first saying that actually somebody sent me, the same person I'm referencing, that is, well, perhaps forgot where they come from and believe themselves to be, well, the patriarch that everyone is missing. Now, if you can make sense of this quote, well, then you're better than me. Because I have toiled over this quote and I can't find out what the fuck it really means. So maybe you all can help me. This is the saying. And mind you, this person sent me the saying and then so arrogantly told me in these words, you can use that on one of your videos. Are you serious, man? Oh, well, thank you. Thank you for your content, sir. I will use that on one of my videos, which I am doing currently. and I was straying from telling you then, but I'm using it now, just like you asked me to, in one of my posts. So what you told me is if you cannot take ownership of your own mistake, you should not bask in the glory of someone else's solution. What the fuck does that mean? Wait a minute. So if I can't take ownership of a mistake I made, then I shouldn't bask in someone else's glory? Wait a minute. Hold on a second. So this is going perspective here, right? Let's say I was at a job I liked and I screwed that job up and I left, but I blamed everybody else there. But I'll take ownership, right? But if I don't take ownership of screwing up that job, then I can't bask in someone else's glory? That doesn't even make sense. What do you mean? What the fuck does that mean? You see, that's where pride and ego, you've made a few accomplishments. Maybe you've inspired a person or two. Maybe provided a job to a person or two. Maybe you're making more money than you ever thought you'd make in your life. And see, when that pride starts to blind that ego of yours, you start to say dumb shit like that. That doesn't mean anything. They have nothing to do with one another. And if somebody can read that, please comment on here what the fuck you think that means. Because I'm at a fucking loss. If you cannot take ownership of your own mistake, I like that. Take ownership of your own mistake. Damn right. You need to. Without that, you're not going to move beyond the mistake. We could say that next, couldn't we? If you can't take ownership of your own mistake, you'll keep repeating the same mistake. We could say that. If you don't take ownership of your mistake, I keep saying it'll just repeat itself. But if you can't take ownership of your own mistake, you should not bask in the glory of someone else's solution. What? If I made a mistake in something, and then someone else got glory from a solution, why wouldn't they get that glory to their solution? Why would I get the glory from their solution if I had nothing to do with their solution? It's jabble. It doesn't mean anything. I'm sorry, but it doesn't mean anything. And there you go. I used it in my post. Brilliant, aren't you? Brilliant. The next inspirational trendy saying I've said, and I'll cover it again, and forgive me if it's redundant to those that have listened before, but I keep hearing it again and again. Be and find your authentic self. I, too, was guilty of this. Anything, we'll switch to the second one, actually. Anything worth doing isn't easy. I covered that before. Are you fucking kidding me?
You know, anything worth doing isn't easy.
Yeah? Okay. I like sitting on the beach with somebody I love. That's easy as fuck. Think of something else that's really easy. I love hugging Patricia. I love hugging my mama. That shit ain't hard. It's definitely worth doing. So process that shit. Imagine if you took that and really concreted that and made that truth. Anything worth doing isn't easy. So anything that was easy for you to do must not be worth doing. That's what that's saying. So if it's easy to do, it must not be worth doing. Okay. That's fucking stupid. It makes no sense. And it makes almost as much sense as find your authentic self. I was guilty as fuck. I was saying that dumb shit in the beginning. You know, find your authentic self. Well, here's what I've come to. There is no authentic self. If you understand that the world and self is in a constant state of change, it can be influenced by any moment from your biology, your experiences, and your environment, or even your own thoughts. When you know that, and you're in a constant state of change, but still an arrogantly claim to tell someone to find their authentic self as if you have found your authentic self. If you have found your authentic self, you have stopped growing. You see, the only authentic self that I can find is that we are authentically, constantly in change. And if we can find that, well, maybe grasping on to that. Can you understand that one, the one that told me to use it in the quote? Can you understand there's no authentic self? Can you get that? See, there's no authentic self. The person you think you are, that you've created yourself to be, the patriarch you believe yourself to be, perhaps, well, it's not authentically you. It's who you are at the moment. Let your wife leave you. Let something shitty happen to you and see if you stay the authentic self. The self changes. It changes right now. The person I was when I started this podcast is going to be different now. And now. And I'm a little different now. Then now, and if you're not open to that change, well, then I would call you concrete, and anything that's concrete, well, doesn't grow. And if you are sure of yourself and concreted in the authentic person yourself, you believe yourself to be, well, good luck, continue growing. You won't probably learn another fucking thing, and more than likely, you'll just tell everybody else what they're supposed to learn from you. Sound familiar? So the authentic self, don't kill yourself over this shit. Don't listen to these fools that are telling you, be authentic. What the fuck does be authentic mean? If authentic mean, am I being authentic because I said fuck? Is that what that means? Is Gary V authentic because he says fuck and fuck college? Get the fuck out of here with this inspirational bullshit. I'm serious, man. So the authentic self, it's a constant state of change. Grasp onto that. Stop trying to find your authentic self. And please, for the love of God, stop trying to say you got to find yourself. Jesus. Go look in the mirror. There you are. You found yourself. Stop looking. Stop saying poetic things that you heard, cliche from TVs and friends and books you've read that sound good, that make your life a movie. And so you say these little trendy things like, I'm just searching for my soul. What? I have to get back to myself. You know, I have to reveal my authentic self. Shut the fuck up. What does that mean? Is that your sexual orientation? Is that the food you like? Is that the music you like? You like the same music, or does that change? Or are you not being your authentic self if you're open to change? And if you're concretely your authentic self, how the fuck do you expect to change or learn anything new? But go ahead. Keep telling people, keep selling your books, keep selling your workshops, keep lying to motherfuckers. And speaking of lying, I saved this topic and I didn't put it up because last time I did, Facebook ripped me off. And they're probably going to rip this down when I go this far. But just be informed, podcasts and social media has now been corrupt. Organic is a thing of the past. Hacker tricks, algorithms, networked computers and phones with millions of fake profiles, likes, and follow mining. 100,000 followers and 2 retweets. 400,000 followers and 33 people watched. Because it's bullshit. We have created some idea of something that is massively appealing. And it's fake. I don't know if you saw an article I posted, but over in China, China or Japan, I can't remember, they had over 10,000 iPhones all rigged up to a network, all with individual social media profiles on Twitter, Facebook, and everywhere else. They all linked to 2 supercomputers, and from those 2 computers, all 10,000 of those profiles were ran from 2 computers by 2 people with 10,000 iPhones. You going to compete with that in your small little studio? You going to compete with that when you do your little $50 boost post? Is that what you're going to do? See, it's over. Net neutrality. It's shown up. And now all you're going to see is what they, well, want you to see. And this links to the authentic self that I talked about, because when you are watching social media, if you're not careful, social media has constructed for you what the authentic person is supposed to be. This is why the story I covered in the beginning, Inspiration to Into Stupidity, I covered that because this is the story. They have created, if you will, this mini-face motivator. The mini-face motivator. We all have different faces, but for the same reasons, we're all saying the same shit. Find your authentic self. You gotta believe. You need to envision. That's why I always love it when 2 badass UFC fighters are in the ring and one of them loses. I like to ask, well, did the other one just believe more than the other one? See, when is it really about, well, I believe, how many UFC fighters believe themselves to be the next Conor? All of them, right? They have to be. So when they get in the ring and they fight, well, did they lose belief for a minute? Did they miss their vision of themselves as a champion? Of course not. It was skill, tools, timing, and a little bit of luck. That's what did it. Not that you envisioned and believed. Sure, I'm telling you, that definitely has power. But you can't prove these things, right? So Facebook even, I mean, Twitter, Instagram, pick it. They shape for you what you want to see. Because remember, they're tagging you, watching you, seeing what you like, what you favor, what you don't like. So they curb for you and then begin to show you a world, well, they think that you see. And Facebook will create a perception for you through your own filter, and over time, you will believe the world to be as you see it. And you'll believe authentic people and inspirers and leaders to be, well, what social media tells you they're supposed to be. I want you to think of someone who inspires you for real. Are they rich? Do they have 18 ab muscles? Can they do 4,000-pound squats and 6-ton deadlifts? I don't know. Maybe they do. That's what I ask you to question the cerebral when you move beyond that. Is it your grandmother? Is it your mother? See, these are people that inspire me. You have to watch what you're watching and be aware of what you're being shown. You may know social media is corrupt. You may know all these things I'm telling you, but you may not be aware of how much it actually influences what you fucking believe and what you believe you are supposed to be. Because if I have another old friend reach out to me and tell me what I'm supposed to be, well, I'll leave that off. We have to be aware. I'm trying to connect all these things, and maybe you can find the whole connections to the idea of baby steps we keep blaming and rationalizing for making any change, linked to people that we follow that are inspiring, that actually are doing stupid things, and how we hold on to pride, our success, our accomplishments and acquirements and acquisitions to prove that we are thus successful. And remember, though, if you can't take ownership of your own mistake, you shouldn't bask in the glory of someone else's solution.
Whatever the fuck that means.
Man. All right. So what I'm starting to do at the end of these podcasts is write in topics. So if there's something you'd like me to cover at the end of any of my next podcasts, please send me a message and perhaps I'll cover it. But I have to tell you all and be honest with you all now what I can no longer do. What I can no longer do is help you out individually. I cannot burden myself with that any longer. It has taken a toll on me over the last 4 to 5 years. So many people reach out for help, and I try to help, and I try to message everybody I can, and then I look up and I realize I'm breaking my own philosophy, which is taking care of me. I forget to take care of myself, even though I tell you all every time I come live. And that's a hypocrite. And I have to make those tough changes. And I'm sorry if I haven't responded to your message or your request for help, but I did write a pretty good fucking book that covers a lot of shit. And if that can't help you, I don't know how much more I'm going to be able to tell you. I'd love to help you all individually one-on-one. I certainly would. But I have to protect myself at this point. It's been too long. So please write in if you got something you're dealing with or something you want to know about, and I'll cover that shit, and I'll get deep like I'm going to cover this one. Probably the one you all been waiting on. Loving and leaving a narcissist. Now I have to start at the beginning of this topic with something you probably don't want to fucking hear, especially if you think you've been with a narcissist. And then I want you to take a step back out of yourself and what you've experienced with that narcissist for a moment. And look at what you're really saying. See, I'm being followed currently by about 15 fucking narcissist groups on Instagram that are talking about all this shit about narcissists. In case you people don't really get it, narcissistic personality disorder is a fucking mental health disorder. They need help. But yet you may be the same person that steps back and condemns the narcissist that may not even be that. Because you more than likely don't even know what it takes to diagnose that. Sure, you've read some trendy memes or some articles that went deep into the research of narcissism, but look at the basic instinct of what it is, and because they match it a few times or for a certain point in certain parts and points in their lives doesn't mean they are a narcissist. Generally, the person casting out the narcissistic label, well, maybe the narcissist. So what most people don't fucking get, and with all of this shit, this is the shit that fucking gets me, with all of this mental health awareness, we can't even say the word retarded. Well, guess what? If I can't say the word retarded, you may not know it, but narcissism, a narcissistic personality disorder, is on the same axis as mental retardation. See, they've changed the DSM. The DSM-5 no longer deals with the axes, but I like the axes. I don't like the DSM-5. It's corrupt in many, many ways, and most of them were anyway. But the DSM-4, the diagnostic manual, if you will, right, the Bible for diagnosis, it covers axes, and axis 1 are your mood disorders, and axis 2, well, that's where you have your personality disorders, antisocial, borderline, narcissistic, and mental retardation. So for all of the progressives out there that love to say, I can't say retarded, when retarded doesn't mean what you think it means, and I'm not describing or disrespecting someone with that diagnosis. You can retard a fire or a fire retardant, correct? Right. So if I can't say that word, but you progressive motherfuckers will turn on the other side, and I'm progressive as the fuck gets too. I'm talking about them ones that want to yell at people and accuse everybody of narcissism and then basically act as if narcissists are the fucking demons on the planet and then forget, and they'll talk about depression, anxiety, PTSD. We have to be gender sensitive. We have to be all open to everything, but fuck narcissists. It's a mental health disorder. That one doesn't count? They don't need help too. Yes, they hurt people. Yes, it can be terrifying. Yes, it's, well, not as easy or not as difficult. I'm sorry, not as difficult to deal with a narcissist as you may think. The most difficult part about loving or living with a narcissist is making sure you don't become one when you leave them. You see, a narcissist, Leo D'Annibal, my mentor, I write about a lot in my book. Leo used to smile when people would complain about a narcissist in their group or a narcissistic or a personality disorder in their group. And Leo would go, I don't understand why that's so difficult to you. You know what a narcissist needs. You know what a narcissist wants. You know how they think, and you can't beat them in cards. You see, if you know a narcissist just needs to know they are the ones that did it, they're the ones that did the good thing, and if anything was wrong, the world caused it or somebody else made them be wrong, so they wouldn't have been wrong unless somebody else made them be wrong, and on and on and on. But they need help too. But the thing is, most narcissists won't seek help. They won't. They don't come. They don't come to therapy. They don't need it. The world needs help more than they do. I jokingly say that I'm at least a little aware that I'm somewhat of a narcissist, which brings down me from being a full-fledged narcissist. Sounds good, doesn't it? Because a narcissist would not be aware that they are a narcissist. I need to clarify that. So loving a narcissist, well, that can come easy, right? They're manipulative. They're good at what they say. Hell, you'd think they were some sort of demon by the way some of these groups talk about them. I want to be like, how fucking bitter are you? You made the choice to be with them. You made the choice to stay with them that long. And hopefully you made the choice to leave if that's what you decided to do. But when do you take self-responsibility for your own choice? When does that really play into you? If you know they're a narcissist and you chose to stay with them, or you couldn't leave, maybe you had cultural boundaries that couldn't let you. Well, you chose that culture. Take the choices all the way back. But see, I just get enraged when I see people that talk about having concern and empathy for PTSD victims and depression people. I'm with that. You should. But then on the side of their mouth, tell you to slap a narcissist, right? Or they're all devils and evil people. It's a mental health diagnosis, people. It is a mental health diagnosis. Getting out of a relationship with a narcissist or dealing with one, it's easy, like I said, because you know what they need. You know, as long as they think they did it, they're the ones that made it happen. Well, then it's easy. It's almost like training a puppy. You know what they need. You know what they want. You just make it seem like it's theirs. And it's frankly like playing cards against somebody and you know their hand. It's easy to deal with. It's only when you expect them to be like you. When you expect them, why can't they just be like I think they should be like? That's you enforcing them. That's you becoming a narcissist. We are influenced by those we hang around, the environments, and especially those we fall in love with. And if you've been in love with a narcissist, the hardest part is not leaving the narcissist. It's not becoming one. Because in order to survive a relationship with a narcissist, one has to become quite arrogant themselves to say that I can get out of this. I'm not the person they make me to be. You have to build yourself up. It becomes a survival tool. I know because, I was raised by one. And it's a survival tool. You have to almost lie to yourself that you do have it together. Otherwise, you can walk down a dangerous path of suicidal thoughts, depression. It can get bad. So you begin to shape this, I can do it. I'm powerful. I'm smart. I can do this. I can do that. You build this up because you have to for survival. That's how bad that becomes. But then what happens is you leave, and now you're a survivor of a narcissist. You survived a narcissistic relationship, and I'm out and about. And I'm going to educate the world on being with a narcissist, what they're like, and I'm going to tell everybody how bad they can be and what you're supposed to do to get out of that relationship, and I'm going to be the one you should listen to. Holy shit, I've become a narcissist. You see. Maybe narcissism is contagious. See, the hardest part is not loving them, and it's not leaving them. It's not becoming one yourself. That is the most difficult issue in dealing with a narcissist. And mind you, you cannot diagnose nor self-diagnose a narcissist, okay? And to wrap this up, maybe. I love, I don't, it's sarcasm. how many people just know who is mentally disturbed or who has a disorder and who doesn't. I just love that they've done some research for years or looked at stuff and they say, well, the person must be a narcissist. And here's the thing. All mental health diagnoses are fucking theoretical. They're a group of symptoms put together that match some sort of criteria that we've put a fucking label on that are all self-report. There's no blood test. There's no brain test. As Dr. Kelly Brogan so bravely pointed out today on social media, there are no tests. You cannot get a brain test to test if you have these things, if you have narcissism. You can't get a blood test. You can't do a brain scan and go, oh, there it is. I knew he was a narcissist. You can't. It's self-report. It's behavior. It can be situational. Hell, you could have been them if you were given their life. You see, the way you begin to deal with a narcissist is you have to find the empathy for them. You see, I write in my book many times that the only way over those hurts or over to get and move beyond those that hurt us is not to diagnose them and then put them on a shelf to go, now I know who they are and they're over there. No, it's harder than that. Empathy. Empathy is how you begin to actually relieve the pain of being with a narcissist or anyone that's caused you pain, trauma, hurt, depression, or anxiety. You have to be empathetic toward them because, as Leo used to tell me, you could have been just like them given their life, their environment, their genetics. It could have been you. But I guess we're better, right? Because we didn't become them. You see how the arrogance now begins to separate you from them? Hell, they get titled into those people. That's how you become one. Mental health diagnoses are theoretical. There are a group of symptoms that we point out that say, hey, if you match 7 of these 10, you could have this. You could have it mildly, moderately, severely. A Likert scale of 1 to 10. It could be short-term, long-term, major depressive. It's ridiculous. Look, I understand and I know we need to call these things something because that's how we study those things. Someone created the word stress, by the way. Stress needed to be studied. It wasn't called anything, so someone called it stress so they could study it. So the idea of diagnoses, are so we can plan a path toward treatment to get it better, to try to fix it. So in somewhat they are necessary, but we have gone way too far. I happen to catch this little clip from this little lockup thing they play on TV when they're in jail. And this little 18-year-old girl was in a jail. And it was sad because she went through their 28-day substance abuse program inside the prison. And by the end, she was sitting in tears. And she's looking at the camera and she says, I thought I'd never say this, but I guess I am an addict. And I damn near lost my shit. And I went, see, that 18-year-old girl just wore that label. She just put that label on her that she's an addict, and she was convinced that she was an addict. And I found it fucking hilarious that her counselor that convinced her that she was an addict, well, was about 400 fucking pounds. Like the carbs and sugar didn't fuck with you, did they? But you teaching her that she's an addict. And when that little 18-year-old girl whose brain not fully developed takes a theoretical diagnosis that's so up in the air, which is not a fucking disease, and then labels herself as being that, not being affected by addiction, or being affected that her boyfriend was a fucking piece of shit, that was her environment that walked her into those issues. No, it was her. And she had deemed herself the addict for life. And so it goes. The diagnosis then wears on this young lady for the rest of her life, and it won't be long before she's back in jail. Because, you know, relapse is a part of recovery. Bullshit. Please keep that in mind, y'all. I had a few other topics on there, but I've been running for a minute. The one that's on deck that I'm going to do is coming up. I don't know when I sit down to do it. It's going to be the History of Mental Health Part 2. The History of Mental Health Part 1, I took you from literally 872 up to 1942. Part 2 that I do is going to be from 1942 to the current day medical model of treatment. And I will be covering the opiate epidemic to date. on part two of the history of mental health. Again, if there's anything that you're dealing with or a topic you'd like me to cover or something you have questions about, just message or email. Please don't send me a novel. I'm more likely not going to read that novel. I can't do that. I can't be that immersed. But if there's certain topics or a little something, write that in. And just why I'm here too, if it has to do with relationships, if you have a question or if you're dealing with a relationship issue or quotations, air quotes, your friend of a friend has a relationship problem, go look up He Said, She Said. It's a Facebook page there. Patricia and I do a show every Sunday at 8 o'clock live. Called He Said, She Said. We talk about love, relationships, and what we're trying to do is send us some messages. You can send a novel then. Send a novel and message us about what you're experiencing in that, and we'll cover it there. But if it's mental health related, if it's personally related, or something like that, or just life related, message me and tell me what's up, or say, hey, Adam, I'd like to hear your view on this, and I'll cover it the best I can. That's the only way I can try to reach everybody and try to help people at the same time while I'm doing the videos. And doing the podcast, etc. But as you know, too, I've been doing a lot co-hosting a show called The Cannacast. We are somewhat taking on the cannabis for treatment because for me, I know it may not be good for everybody. I'm not that naive, people. That cannabis is not good for everybody. It's not good for everyone who's depressed or as anxious for everybody. It's not. But my point is if we're handing out antidepressants that will make you want to kill yourself, or Prozac that makes you go on a shooting rampage, if we're handing those out and we're handing out narcotics to get people off of narcotics that wind them up in rehabs for the rest of their lives, labeling them as an addict, if we're giving out these deadly, highly addictive, potent, chemical, synthetically made drugs, then why the fuck wouldn't you let cannabis at least attempt, at least take that attempt? So that's my baby step, if you will. That's my baby step, if you will. I know it's not going to end the opiate epidemic or the crisis, but if it makes a fucking dent, then great. We're taking shots at it. And that's the least thing we could do. Is at least open up. I've said that, and I've said it numerous times. When Rogan asked me, so what do we do, right? How do we fix this? Well, the first thing you start is you stop putting people in fucking jail. You stop putting people in jail that are dealing with chemical addiction issues, because the truth is the chemical addiction itself is merely a fucking symptom. The addiction itself is a fucking symptom. You have to treat the person and the environment, not the symptom. If you take cold medication and you got the flu and your sore throat dies down a little bit, you still have the fucking flu. It doesn't go away. So simply just treating the substance abuse does not treat the person, nor does it change the environment, hence why the recidivism rates are so fucking high in our current mental health treatment right now. That shit needs to change. Whew. I'm also going to talk about athletes' depression on the next one. I've made a little leeway, actually, and wanted to talk further about that. You know what? I didn't fucking even finish. I'm squirreling off like crazy. My point is you don't put them in jail. You give them treatment, but my point is you treat them at home. Sorry about that, y'all. Rewind. Squirrel. All right, we're back. Treat them at home within their environment. Treat the person. And mind you, going home in their environment, yes, expensive. I get it. Baby steps, motherfuckers. Yeah, it's expensive. I get it. But when you stop recidivism rates, when they don't go to rehab 85 times in fucking 4 years, sure, you may have had to work with them for a year or two at home, occupational therapists included. Getting their environment set up, treating the person, not drugging the symptoms. Those are the first two steps you do. A third thing you do is you fucking legalize everything. Portugal and many other places are great examples. And if all you weirdo fucking old school right wingers are going, oh my God, we're just going to have drug addicts everywhere. Well, yeah, have you been to a liquor store, motherfucker? You been to a Super Bowl? You been to a football game? How many drugs you see getting drank up around that motherfucker? Right? But yet, if we legalize everything, what does that mean? Everybody just, oh, it's legal now. I can shoot heroin. It doesn't work that way. You legalize everything. You start incarcerating people because they're chemically incarcerated with the symptom of addiction because their environment is shit. Those are the first things that you change. That's where you fucking start. And you open up every fucking avenue of treatment available. Be that psychedelics, be that cannabis, be that anything. Be that ecstasy, be that fucking anything. MDMA, I should call it. Be anything. Open up every fucking avenue. Ayahuasca, DMT, you open up fucking every avenue because people are dying at rapid fucking rates from opiates, but yet we hold back psychedelics and cannabis. You're out of your fucking minds. Can't regulate it and make money on it yet, can you? And it might actually fucking heal people, and we can't have that shit in this fucking reactive medical system here, can we? God forbid we're proactive. But meanwhile, we'll keep doing what we're fucking doing, right? This is what bothers me about people that like to talk about their success. This is what bothers me, that people talk about how they got it together and their life's good and they're taking care of everything that's around them in their proximity, thinking that they are the world's best fucking parent, when the truth is the world that your child lives in is fucked. And what are you going to do? Sell them the same corrupt system? Give them your same values? Maybe. And as you pass those values down to them, guess what? They're going to hit the same fucking society that you hit. The same terrible medical health treatment, the same terrible mental health treatment, the piss poor education system, the terrible college corruption and anything else. They're still going to hit all of that shit. But yet, sit on the high horse and say, yep, I take care of my family. I take care of them. They got houses and we do vacations and they got Christmas presents. I'm fucking changing shit. I'm working 60 hours a week to support my fucking family. Good for you. I'm glad you're doing it. And there's people out there who don't fucking do that. Don't let me shorthand you. But let me be clear. This is the cognitive rampage. We don't dibble and dabby around the average. You're not the fucking leader because you run faster than people. We have to go beyond that here on the cognitive rampage. We have to go beyond what everybody's fucking saying, what everybody thinks is just the norm. We have to question those things. Hell, I'm willing to go far enough to question the idea of family. What if the idea of family is actually holding us all back from being a family? Process that shit. Or is that too much in your fucking concrete little brain there? Maybe it could be, because think about it. Before you had a family, you cared about your friends, your community, you called your friends, you hung out, you were socially connected. The minute you got your family, it's fuck everybody else. When your family's in the car and people are cutting you off, right? You're thinking in your head, fuck them, man. My family's in danger. Fuck these people. We're getting in line first. We're going to get there at 7 a.m. I'm taking care of my shit. Now tell me how that idea of my family first could keep us all away from in this world from being a full family. Too much? Too scary? Does it question what you believe to be true in this world about what's real? So as people that I know very personally sit on their fucking egotistical high horses about how much money they make, how they'll be presidents one day, and how they are the spitting image of what a father's supposed to be in patriarchal world. Meanwhile, you do nothing to change this world. You do nothing to actually make a fucking impact. To really change the education system. To really take on the corruption. You talk about, you know, the corruption exists. You talk about corrupt men and women of this world, but yet you do nothing. You do nothing but sit and say, I gotta make my paycheck. But yet we claim to be that we're doing it the right fucking way. That shit is piss poor to me. See, it's worse, right? When somebody's doing something bad and everybody just stands around and watches. And it's even worse to me when something bad's going down and the whole world's affected, including your own kids, and we stand back and we just watch and say, well, I can't do anything about it. I'm doing what I can. I'm working. I'm paying my bills. I don't take anything from the government. I'm doing what I'm supposed to do, and that's all I can fucking do. Okay. You're passing down the same fucking fucked up world you know you're living in to your kids. And what, you going to make it better because you left them money? You going to make it better because what? Or you actually want to change this motherfucker? Because I promise you, one in three people are going to experience a mental health issue. And more than likely, it's going to be your kid, your spouse, your mom, your dad, your son, your daughter, your cousin. It's going to be somebody you know that experiences that mental health. And guess what? They get access to the same fucked up, corrupt treatment that kills most people. And if you're affected by it, then you're going to be open to the only treatment. Because think about it right now. If somebody in your life is being affected by addiction or comes down with being affected by addiction, what are you going to do? You're going to do a shitty intervention, a terrible idea to get people healthy. You're going to circle them up and read them all the long letters about how much you love them and all the bad stuff they've ever done for you, and then tell them, we love you so much, we want you to get the fuck out of here for 6 months and get away from us. You see, it doesn't make any sense. Your social connection, your family, that's what you need around you to get better. But what? An intervention just tells you to do what? Get the fuck away from everybody. We love you. You've done all these terrible things to us, and we love you, but we need you to go away for 6 to 10 months. Okay, we need you to go. Yeah, that ain't love. It's not support. That is what is open to you if you become affected by anxiety one day. And trust me, it'll happen. Depression or something, when that hits you, the only access to help available to you is what's available now. The corrupt, shitty fucking system you're probably doing nothing about, hoping that your wonderful fathering and mothering will keep your kids from affecting or being affected by mental health disorders. Well, guess what? You can't protect them from this society. It is sick and it makes people sick. And unless we're willing to actually make some changes, talk the real shit, risk your fucking life, risk your job. I was fired from both of my therapist jobs for telling the fucking truth, and I've been blackballed since. It takes fucking sacrifice to make real fucking change, not goddamn baby steps. Not fucking baby steps. I'm tired of this country taking baby steps while people fucking die. I'm tired of this shit. It makes me want to go, fuck you all. It makes me want to go, I can't take care of you anymore. I can't help anybody because I'm freaking the fuck out here. But you have to keep fighting. You have to keep fighting. I'm fighting for your fucking kid. I'm fighting for your kid, your family. I'm fighting for everybody else, and you all are out there fighting for them too. Because we know what's wrong. We know we're being led by giant fucking gorillas that lift giant weights and have a bunch of shit that are destroying their body, pumping themselves full of HGH and testosterone, growing giant beards, telling you they need to be more like you, or you need to be more like them. This is the leadership that we got. This is what we're following. Hell, Stephen Hawking died, and there goes our fucking leader right there, if you ask me. Somebody not affected by the ego of the physical. He could think. That was a lost leader. Rest in peace, Stephen Hawking. We'll miss you, bro. Jacques Fresco, we'll miss you too. Shout to you too. It's people like that that we're missing. That question this fucking, this corrupt system, man. I'm getting too rough, y'all. I just fucking mean this shit. I mean this shit, and I hear it every day. I hear the garbage. I hear the fake inspiration. I hear the fucking same story back and forth, the people we're supposed to look up to. The people that are in places where they could take advantage to make real change in this planet. I'm tired of listening to parents talk about how corrupt the world is, but they do nothing about it but work their 40-hour-a-week fucking job. I may be talking directly to one of you. Hell, I'm probably talking to my goddamn self. Most of the time, I do like to say those that are preaching are talking to themselves. And, well, I'm probably talking to myself too, y'all. Hell, this podcast was about being pissed, getting the name out there. And as I went on, it was me being transparent about my life, what I'm experiencing, what I'm going through. And if you can touch it, maybe you feel it, maybe you can understand it, have some sort of relation to it. And if it helps you, fucking great. But for the most part, I'm just trying to fucking change the world and make motherfuckers know some shit. While I'm also being transparent about my existence. I had so many fucking more notes to go down. Look at this shit, y'all. Look at it. Look at these notes. If you can watch, man. Let me look at it. You see them notes, man? They still going. Look at this shit. I don't know if you can even see that. I had so many fucking notes, man. I guess we're supposed to celebrate baby steps, right? Yeah, we'll celebrate baby steps, y'all. It's been a rough podcast to do, man. I'm pretty heated, I guess, man. I'm pretty heated about those things. I get upset. I really do. I get upset, man. I get upset at men that aren't men anymore, that hide behind the idea of what society has told you as a man. I get upset at this. It's pathetic. It's pathetic that you have to take your existence as a man and convert that to some sort of martyrism and go work your 85 hours a week, which, hey, it's the world we live in, right? Got to pay the bill, right? But then somehow have to convert that to what you're doing is some sort of warrior-esque shit. When isn't the truth you just want to spend more time with your kids and your family? I think so. But does it matter that much what size house it is? What the car looks like? Where you go for your two-week vacation? It seems like that matters more than the time, because if you're putting in as many hours as you are at your 9-to-5, crunching it in, well, you're losing time with the ones you love, if that's what it's really all about. But see, a man in prison or a woman in prison, well, they have to create a new world in there. And when you're locked up, you have to make up a fictional world. You have to make ants your friends, find things that entertain you, re-clean your cell 45 times, make sure everything's organized and neat. But eventually, at night when you lay down and you wake up, you still know you're in fucking prison. So for so many people that have curbed and it created the delusion that by you going to work 60 to 70 hours a week, not seeing your family, but providing a bunch of stuff, somehow means you're doing what you're supposed to do in this world. But I want you to take for a second, and I want you to think about a Native American. Put yourself out on the plains of Montana or the mountains of Montana somewhere. Just you, under the sky, watching the sunrise or the sunset, if you will. The smell of wood burning. No social constructs around to tell you what life is supposed to be like. See, I do this because I want you to go back to the beginning about what life really is. So what? Maybe we are just a biological thing that happened accidentally, that developed and evolved over time. Maybe we are some sort of spiritual creation made of stardust that was all planned and destined. Maybe it's a mix of all of them, right? If we know there may or may not be meaning to this life, but if you can be that native sitting under the stars without street signs, without success, without motivational videos, without 401ks, without marriages, if you will, without contracts, without property purchases, without health insurance, without all of this bullshit that we've created, when all that goes away and you go back to what life really was when it started, just nature and man. And then look at your life now and tell me the things you've acquired and what you've accomplished and the paycheck you get if you tell me that's really the meaning of fucking life. You see, I don't think it is. But we are blinded by man-made constructs and then we enforce them to believe that that's what life is about. Life is about putting in your work. How many women out there just want their men to work all day? That's a good man right there. He works 70 hours a week and I stay home and take care of the kids. That's a good man right there. Is it? Or is that a man who's really in prison that has curbed his perception so he can survive it? And has to create the perception that I am thus the martyr and the sacrificer of my family because someone has to, even though the most thing important to me is spending time with that family, well, I don't actually do. Well, because we have to go to Disney next year. Yeah. We have to be able to afford our beach vacation. And these things. We got to pay HOA dues. See, none of that meant anything when you just sat under the Creator's sky. But yet, our arrogance as human beings, we've built this world of make-believe and fake things that we believe to be our reality of what life was well meant to be. And we create our perceptions to say that, well, what we're doing is what you're supposed to do. This is what any good man or woman would do. They would sacrifice what they actually love doing to go do what they're supposed to do. And for me, that's a fucking sellout. It's a sellout. And then lie to yourself like you're changing the world. I'm going the fuck off, y'all. But I meant that. I mean it, man. We forget. Go back. Go all the way back. Back before all these creations of cities and democracies and reds and blues and all the different religions. Just an organism. Trying to figure itself out. Perhaps living in some existential film. Ask yourself then what's important to you and ask yourself what you're doing now. Does it really match what you really love and what you mean? And then to really drive the point home, I want you to think if your son or your daughter came to you and said, well, I really love doing this and it's my passion, but I can't make as much money at it and I want to get married. And since I want to get married, I have to buy a house and I have to have these things. So should I quit playing and doing what my dream is and what I love? So I can do what I'm supposed to do, like you did, Dad. I bet you'd tell him to chase the dream, wouldn't you? Still look like a hero? Huh. More of these things to come, y'all. I'm on a real tip, man. I don't give a shit no more, y'all. I fucking love it. I fucking love it. I don't give a shit no more. I'm not trying to make it to any other place. Never have when I started this shit. Never have. Just trying to help people, man. That's where I encourage you to start questioning yourself, because many times what you're stating to be concrete, whether it's fuck that, that's stupid, or that's awesome, is a great place to start to question the opposite. Because more than likely, it's touching on a concrete belief of yours that's probably holding you to be that same concrete, authentic self. We have to question even the things that worked for us once. We have to learn to question the things that may have saved our lives once. I had to. Because lifting the weights and the squatting and being jacked like I used to be, well, may have saved my life for a little bit of time and kept me alive from doing bad shit or something. But eventually it was going to cripple me. And I had to wake up to that. But we have to learn to question even those things that we think are working. Recently, I've had to do that with myself. I've had to question many concrete beliefs that have popped out that I didn't realize were concrete beliefs, things I thought about myself, my life. And it's hard. It's hard to do that. That's why I wrote that book, man, so you could catch self. And I do it to myself. If you've read my book and you hear RSA and all this stuff, I do this to myself. As I'm talking out loud and I'll hear myself go, well, here's a belief I have, right? Because that's just, I should. And I caught myself saying should. And I went, oh, shit, there it is. And I found that little concrete belief, and boy, was it hard to fucking entertain. It was hard to entertain that what I believed was so. Yeah. Figured I'd just sit in that dramatic pause for a minute, man. But, yeah, I was riding the fuck out, people. What's up, Eddie? Eddie Aguilar. Check out their podcast, y'all. Mindset Mountain. I was on their podcast not too long ago, man. Shout out to you, Eddie. My boy Shane, what's up, brother? How y'all doing, man? Andy Nelson, man, you're an inspiration yourself, brother. Keep fighting, man. Keep doing it for those little kids you got, man. They're the cutest little things, too, man. That's who you're really prepping this life for, you know? Yeah, I'm certainly on one today, Andy. Good Lord. What's up, Nicole? Nicole Kelly. Thank you, Adam. Oh, Rampage on. I love that. If I'm inspiring, that's only because you're perceived it to be. So there's a lot of people probably watching that probably said, fuck this guy. And if they did and they clipped off ears, it's because I punched them right in their fucking cognitive dissonance. I like to do that. Leo used to accuse me of kicking your front door psychology. He would always sneak in the back window and be waiting for you when you got up there, would be his metaphor. But I tend to kick in the front door. So a lot of times I will beat the shit out of your cognitive dissonance. And most people can't take that and want to hear it. Hell, I don't want to take it when people tell me my beliefs and hit my cognitive dissonance. I'm like, fuck you. I don't want to hear it. Much less my ass telling you all this other shit that you may be questioning that almost seems inevitable with the life that we lead, yeah? What's up, Tanya? Boy, Alvin. Alvin, you're an exception, though, sir. Alvin, you're an exception to me. We've been... It's so weird to call, like, myself a mentor to you, brother. One, I never felt much deserving to do so or be that at all. But you asked, and I obliged. You, Alvin, I would certainly keep talking to with one-on-one. There's a difference with you, Alvin. And, I'll put you out there, too, homie. Fuck it. You don't ever call me. I say ever because we got our life, so that'd be irrational. You may still call me one day and do it, but you've never reached out and called me and proceeded to complain about your life and other people. You have sought solutions each time you reached out to me. If not, we're already working on a solution yourself. Frankly, Alvin, I don't know how much more I could help you with or mentor you with, sir. You seem to already, have grasped that idea. You're a hell of a man and a great family man and a good kid. Leader in your community, too. We can keep chatting, Alvin. I dig that. What's up, Tanya? Jack? Lisa? Hope y'all are well. Patricia? As normal. But that's it, y'all. I'll rock another podcast sometime when it hits me. But, send me a message if there's something you want me to cover. I'm going to try to work those in. If there's a trendy saying, too, that you keep hearing all the time that you're not so sure means anything, message me that shit, too. So I'm trying to cover a mainstream topic, a trendy topic, and then a write-in topic on each podcast. So if somebody writes in on something, just message what you're going through or experiencing. Again, please, don't send me a novel, people. I'd love to read it, but it's weird how when I look at the novel or when certain people comment, like encyclopedias on posts, I just look at it and go, ah, I can't do it. I can't do it, man. I ain't got that much time in the day. I'd rather do a podcast than run my mouth for a while. That I got time for. But do that, y'all. Love y'all very much. I'm here for you. If nobody else is in your corner fighting for you, then allow me to. Even if you hate me, I still love you. Hope you're taking care of you. Hope you're living, speaking, breathing, believing, and behaving. You a motherfucking cognitive rampage.